welcome to episode 17 of Black Girl Squee, where we celebrate Black Girl Magic with a squee! I'm Dee Dee, also known as Dust Daughter on Twitter.
And I'm Enda, also known as Enda's Corner on Twitter.
And you can contact us a number of ways to contact the show. We're at Black Girl Squee, all one word. As we already mentioned, Enda is at Enda's Corner on Twitter. I'm at Dust Daughter on Twitter. Our Tumblr is blackgirlsquee.tumblr.com. Our email is blackgirlsquee@gmail.com. And we're also on iTunes. So if you want to leave us a review or a rating, we'd love to read it on the show. So a couple of other notes before we get started. Our spoiler policy is that we spoil shit, especially How to Get Away with Murder now that it's back.
Yes.
We cuss a lot and we talk a lot about peen. So that has been your warning.
Yes.
Third straight week back with no no feedback.
Yeah, I feel like we got like something from K Rage, like maybe a heads up on something or something like that. But anyway, shout out to you, K Rage.
Yeah. I think she wanted to make sure we talked about Audra McDonald. So.
Yeah, okay, okay.
So we got you, girl. other than that, what's up, y'all? What's up? Is this on? Wake up. Where is everybody? And anyway, let's get to our squee-worthy news. First up, is Dee Reese, winning a Directors Guild Award for her work, directing HBO's Bessie.
Yay.
So, yay, just deserved. This happened a few weeks ago, but, I'd forgotten to add it to our news. So.
It's Dee Reese. It's always worth discussing.
Exactly. So, to Dee Reese, we give a squee
squee! Congratulations.
Yay!
And speaking of awesome HBO portrayals of Black women, Audra McDonald is going to be bringing her acclaimed show Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill to HBO, and that should debut on March 12th in 2016. If you remember, last year she won her 6th Tony Award for her portrayal of Billie Holiday in this, and I unfortunately never did get to see the show, but I did see her perform from it on Stephen Colbert, and the fact that she sounds exactly like Billie Holiday is uncanny and unreal.
She sounds nothing like Audra McDonald.
Nothing. She transforms.
It's amazing. So
yes.
It's so good that we can finally see it.
Yes. Oh, wow.
And
I can't wait for this.
And, you know, Lin-Manuel Miranda, you're next.
Yeah. But I really just want them to do like a great performances and, you know, to just record a performance and not make an adaptation. But
well,
she filmed this before a live audience at Cafe Brazil in New Orleans.
Because play is really just a one woman thing for the most part, where she's performing she's performing like her greatest hits, and, you know, talking throughout. So it's really a one woman thing. So it's not like
good.
It would be any much different, you know. Yeah.
That's so
bringing
good.
It to TV.
That's good. Because sometimes film adaptations of stage shows are not. No.
That's no, all, like, all you have to do is just turn the camera on, point it at Audra.
Yeah.
And you got yourself a show.
No, yeah.
Yeah. You got yourself a show.
Yeah.
So to Audra McDonald, we give a huge there's been new music this week coming from a lot of great people, and from one of them, just in time, because some other people have been slipping, but we we'll talk about that later, I guess. You know, just when we were growing tired of biracial British soul singers, Corinne Bailey Ray comes back to save the day. She will drop her third album called The Heart Speaks in Whispers on May 13th. There's pre-orders already on iTunes and Amazon. She released a new video on her birthday for Been to the Moon, which is sort of a Afro-futuristic vibe. So, yay. Corinne Bailey Ray, we're glad you're back.
Yes.
We missed you. Now, we don't have to think about what's her face anymore.
No.
Also with new music is Santa Gold with 99 Cents. I've been listening to the album nonstop, and it's really good. Great, really interesting sounds. Sounds like nothing you've... It sounds like Santa Gold, but it sounds like nothing else that anybody else is putting out.
Yeah, Santa Gold never sounds like anything. I mean, she even, like, her albums don't even sound the same, you know? I mean, the first one, Santa Gold, is completely different from Master of My Make-Believe, and now this one is completely different from that. And I mean, man, she just stays on her creative flow. She stays doing it. You know, one of my heroes.
Yeah. This is a really good album. Really good to see her back. And also good to have back is Miss Charlene Tweet Keys. Many of you may remember her from her work with Missy Elliott, and from her first album called Southern Hummingbird, which is still a classic to me. But she's back, and she has a new album called Charlene, which is her government name. So it's just good to hear her voice. She has a very sweet, soulful voice, and it's really nice to hear. It's just nice to hear her back. So to all these women, Corinne Bailey Ray, Santa Gold, and Tweet, we give a squee!
Okay. Next item on Squeeworthy News, a really, really awesome hashtag trended Thursday. It was called Trap Covers.
Yes.
So this is just one of the brilliant things I love about Black Twitter, because that night in the past couple of days we saw
what had happened was
these white people picked up their acoustic guitars and started making their quote unquote ironic acoustic covers of Rihanna's work and Beyonce's Formation, and it was atrocious. I made it like 10 seconds through each of these and like, no, and just and had to turn it off.
That's 10 seconds more than I did.
Mm. Seconds of my life I will never get back, and I can't unhear it. So Black Twitter decided, hey, we can do this too. And so they took some of the whitest songs and some, you know, just, you know, odd and off songs and remade them into trap songs. And the thing is, as hilarious as it all was, it was all banging. I mean,
they go hard.
It's like, I'm gonna need full versions of like Bohemian Rhapsody.
One more time. I need that Britney Spears cover.
I don't even listen to Britney Spears, but that was awesome. Nope. I mean, the talent in that, though, I mean, they were all so talented. it was actually supposed to be a joke, but it actually ended up being, they did some really good trap covers of all these songs. And it trended, like I said, it trended well for a couple of days, I think. And you know what? This is why I love Black Twitter, because, oh, wow.
This is the most creative clapback ever.
Yes.
You just gotta love Black folks. There was a good one of Goodbye Earl from the Dixie Chicks. Goodbye Earl. Suck a dick, Earl. Goodbye Earl. You a jerk, Earl.
They were doing like Animaniacs theme song.
Oh, God. It was so good. Oh my God.
Oh, it was beautiful.
I know. And it just, best of all, it confused white folks. Just like we were confused. Why? Why would anybody need an acoustic version of Formation?
And it's like people were already complaining about work. They're like, oh, she's singing gibberish. And like, it's patois, you jackass.
Oh God.
And then, I don't, ugh. So that's what you get when you come, you know, out your lane.
This is why
you need to stay all the way in your lane, because we will show you just how foolish you really look.
Yeah. Don't.
And then create masterpieces.
I'm saying, just offhand jokes turned into this. This is amazing. I love us.
Yes.
So to everybody, all the men and women who created trap covers, we need them full MP3s.
Yes.
ASAPtually. And thank you.
Yes.
And to the girl who made that Goodbye Earl trap remix, I give a personal squeeze.
Goodbye, Earl.
Suck a dick, Earl. Good. Great, Earl.
Oh, Lord. Oh, man.
Okay. Oh, God. Now for something totally different. Enda has started a 30-day Black Femme Genius in Film Challenge. This is following her 30 days of Black Femme Genius in Music. And speaking of Black Femme Geniuses in Film, Ava DuVernay has been hired to direct A Wrinkle in Time.
Yay!
Hey, many of you know the story from your childhood by Madeline L'Engle. And she's going to direct it. And I'm sure she's going to have some input. The script was written by the lady who wrote Frozen, I think. But I'm sure Ava will have some input. You will see her fingerprints in the final cut of this film. So to Ava DuVernay, we give a
sneeze. And our last item of Squeeworthy news. Some of you may have seen the pictures circulating this week, but London Fashion Week, I think it just ended, or it's ending today. And there was a show of a designer, I think it's pronounced Ashish or Ashish. I have absolutely no idea who this designer is. I never heard of them before, but they did a beautiful show ready to wear. And it featured black women wearing colorful afros that were the exact same colors as their clothes. I mean, the color coordination was beautiful. I mean, and they're calling their hair like little fluffy clouds and things like that. And, you know, and they were just pretty. I mean, all these different types of clothes, you know, pants and shirts and, you know, dresses and all of these, you know, really, you know, pretty, you know, high fashion things, and they had these gigantic afros. It just looked good. I'm like, this is how you include us. You know?
Nice.
But, yeah, you didn't have, you know, white women in blackface or, you know, this, you know, quote unquote multicultural, you know, taking, you know, something that looks like us and throwing it on somebody else. You just used black women. Mm-hmm. And this is how it is done, and they looked gorgeous.
Yeah, you didn't appropriate, you didn't fetishize, but it was still flattering. So,
yeah,
kudos to you, Ashish.
Yeah.
And Squee!
Okay.
So that's all of our Squee-worthy news, and now to our How to Get Away with Murder recaps. Birdman hand rub, cue the hand rub.
Yep.
We're going to talk about two episodes. This past Thursday's, which was called "It's a Trap," and the Thursday before, which was called "She Hates Us." So, we'll start with episode 211 first, which is called "She Hates Us." So, which is, I guess, sort of a play on the movie, the Spike Lee movie, She Hate Me, but also an actual quote that Michaela says in the in the episode. Like most of the episode names, it ends up being something that somebody says.
Now that I see the episode name, I'm kind of wondering, is that something also to do with Bride of Frankenstein as well?
Hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. Let me stop. Too many layers. Too many.
But I don't know. This was an interesting episode. We're getting a lot of... Both episodes seem to be centered around Annalise and Wes again. So maybe this whole back half of the season is just really delving into this whole Kristoff mystery and Annalise's connection to Wes and his mother and all of that stuff. So everybody else, all the other characters might have to take a step back so we can focus on this story. Which is good, but I just wish they would answer some questions instead of raising more of them. Anyway.
I can't keep up.
I know. So there is a parallel between Annalise and Wes. She's sleeping too much and she enjoys it. Wes can't sleep at all.
And he wants sleeping pills.
Yeah. So he goes to the hospital and, you know, begs the doc for some sleepy pills. She says no because she's good at her job and sees that there's something more to this story.
Mm-hmm.
And so Wes gets mad. It says something really dumb about, well, you know, you're going to feel bad if I commit suicide or something like that. And that's enough for her to keep him on a psychiatric hold. dumbass.
Yeah.
So he's on some crazy 100 hours or more psychiatric hold.
I think it's usually like 72 hours.
Usually is, but they mentioned something like 100 or something hours or something in the episode. And meanwhile, she's, you know, basically giving him therapy to find out, you know, what's behind him not being able to sleep. So that's going on while Annalise is working on other matters at the house. And basically, Laurel is trying to be her Bonnie. you know, Annalise fires her real quick when she says the wrong thing. Because apparently Annalise is really not about that forgiveness shit. The case that she's working on features a man that murdered someone else's son. But he keeps saying that it's an accident. And the mother wants to have some sort of mediation so she can forgive him and because she wants to feel better. She says it's selfish, but she wants to feel better. And she pleads to the court to have this mediation. And so they finally get it. And the mother is played by Paula Newsome, which an actress that you may remember from other shows, who I know she was also on that short-lived black hospital show, City of Angels, decades ago.
But Viola Davis was on that show, too.
So, hey, reunion. But she's a great actress, and she really makes you feel for this mother who is just trying to make sense of something that was really, you find out in the end, kind of senseless and irrational. And, you know, done during a moment of fury, and jealousy and just stuff like that. But, you know, it's something permanent made out of a impermanent emotion that they can't take back. So she's trying to make sense of it and trying to forgive, but he keeps lying, you know, during the mediation. And finally, he kind of breaks down and tells the truth that, you know, he killed the woman's son on purpose and then took his phone, took the victim's phone and sent her a text to make it look like he was still alive. So the opposing lawyer wants to use that to give him the death penalty. But the but of course, Annalise wants to fight against that because they had a deal originally before the mediation for 15 years and doesn't see why it should go beyond that. But her client finally says, I'll take life. I don't know why. I don't know why. All of a sudden, he feels super guilty, but I ain't taking life for nobody. Yeah, sorry. No.
I'm kind of wondering, though, if the victim's mom's plea on his behalf kind of got to him, though.
Maybe. I mean, it must have, because I don't see any other reason. Because he had 15 years on the table, and you're going to take life.
Yeah, because she is adamant to forgive him for this. She just has it in her that she needs to forgive him for this, for what he did. She just has that in her head.
Even after he told the truth, she was like, yep. Okay. And she just moving the forgiveness train right along.
Yeah.
So, and even after he takes takes life, that sentence, you know, she's given him her phone number and saying that she's gonna follow him, you know, through this and get help him get through this. And I'm like, girl, why are you doing this to yourself?
I mean, because she was saying to, you know, Annalise, like, I'm trying to heal. You know, that's the, you know, that's what I need right now. And I'm like, I can, you know, understand that, but it's also like, you know, she is, you know, the victim, and she can react to it any way she wants, but it's like, wow. So, I mean,
how is it healing to see him for the next 50 years?
I don't know.
And go back and forth to jail. I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah, but I think they kind of based that, you know, on this story I heard on StoryCorps. This is kind of the same thing that happened. A woman, she has a relationship with the dude who killed her son. He was 16 at the time when he did it. And so he did his time. He got out, and it's like they live next door to each other now and everything. And they have kind of a mother-son relationship now. And so, you know, she actually did also found like some sort of organization for people who have lost, you know, their loved ones to, you know, some sort of crime or violence and like that. And I think part with her, you know, when she was trying to get over the death of her son, okay, if I can forgive this child, you know, because he was a child when it happened too, maybe I can move on with my life and, you know, and it won't hurt as much. And I think that's kind of where they base these characters. And so I honestly don't understand how that works either, because I'm not a forgiving type, but I mean, I can kind of see her logic in a way, like maybe she don't want to carry the hate around. I mean, I can understand that, but it's like still, wow.
I can let the hate go and not have to see her ass week after week going down to the jail.
Yeah, spending my time.
Yeah.
On that.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's what happens. And then, this episode was kind of weird to me because, you know.
Yeah.
You may not watch Grey's Anatomy, but Grey's Anatomy is all about having the cases parallel what's going on in the doctor's lives. And for this one instance, Annalise's case mirrored sort of what she was going through in her personal life. Well, the mother wanted forgiveness for her son's murderer. And Laurel kept urging Annalise to forgive Wes for shooting her. And like I said before, Annalise ain't about that forgiveness life. So, she fired Laurel. She said, my real Bonnie is back, so I don't need you anymore. And, which is cold, but, so yeah. Annalise wasn't trying to hear about nothing Laurel was saying. And so she was firing everybody. She fired Laurel. She fired Caleb. She was like, you know, you're not my client anymore. I'm not your lawyer anymore. It's not my job to take care of you. And then we go back to the doctor, and Wes is telling the doctor about how he found his mom dead at home. And the doc decides that this recent shooting of Annalise triggered Wes's memories about his mom, and that's why he can't sleep. But the doc doesn't know that he shot Annalise.
Yeah,
and was damn near trying to kill her. So she's still missing information. But Wes does cry a lot, and he looks really pretty doing it. So
Wes looks really pretty this whole season, anyway.
Mm-hmm. And he kept that beard. Yes,
he
good knows. Job, Alfred. Good job.
He knows.
Yeah. Looking full grown.
Yes.
I guess that's enough. I guess that's enough to, because by the time that everybody finally finds out where he is, you know, and comes down there, Wes is walking out of the hold. So.
Oh yeah. Also, they all walked out on Annalise. They said they didn't want to be involved with her anymore. So it's like,
but she wasn't fazed because she know they're going to come crawling back like they always do. Wes finally gets out of psychiatric hold. Annalise drops off a file at Wes's apartment about the Charles Mahoney trial. She doesn't forgive, but she gives him a little piece of information about his past and possibly her connection to his mother.
Mm-hmm.
And then Connor calls Annalise at the end of the episode and says that Philip, the missing Hapstall brother, half-brother, has a video of, you know, the Murder Five and Annalise at the Hapstall mansion the night of Annalise's shooting. Dun, dun, dun. So.
Yeah.
So they have to do something to fix that in the next episode.
Ooh. This episode.
So the next episode is called It's a Trap.
It's a Trap.
Yeah. Which is something that Annalise says to the Murder Five, Keating Five, whatever you want to call them, Murder Club, which is actually the Murder Three because, you know, Laurel and Wes weren't at Annalise's house. Anyway, getting ahead of myself.
We get to that.
Episode 212, It's a Trap, it continues straight on from the end of the last episode. Philip is planning to take the video to the police unless Annalise gives him $1 million. Annalise doesn't have $1 million, and she sure doesn't, and even if she did, she sure doesn't want to give it to Philip.
Yep.
So she tries to gather some money by going back to Caleb and saying that, you know, she'll help him, but she needs some money wired to her, you know, right away. No questions asked. And she needs Caleb to go to the prison where his sister Catherine is and find out some information if she knows anything about where Philip is or anything about this video. Annalise brings Michaela with her back to the Hapstall mansion to talk to Caleb. So they manage to reconcile in a naked way. And so I guess they forgot all about calling each other whores an episode ago. But whatever. I guess Michaela just liked them light eyes or whatever. I don't know.
Caleb was a fucking jerk the previous episode.
Caleb?
Yeah.
Caleb? Ugh. I'm sorry. You call me a whore. We're done.
Yeah.
So Caleb goes to prison and Catherine says some stuff about Philip loving her like a real brother, like she wanted Caleb to love her, and I'm like,
trying to like, okay, does she mean like love or like he slipped as her brother, and which is what I'm really hoping, because if she means like in love, like, oh.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not related, but
I know, but
they
still,
grew up together.
Yeah. That's still so, family, and it's still
yeah,
weird.
It's still incesty.
Yeah,
so.
I mean,
She tries to clean it up by saying, you know, he has my back, or some, you know, somebody who has my back,
yeah.
And you know, all this other stuff. And I'm like, all right, Catherine, nah, you didn't let it slip.
Yeah, plus
because Caleb heard it, and he was like, he came back home looking real confused.
Yeah.
So.
And I mean, yeah, Catherine is worn down, and she looks pretty terrible right now. But you know, she's in jail, of course she does. And so, I mean, I'm like, if he tries to like say that's probably why she said that, I'm like, no, bruh, she was being honest. And
it's like, hey, I'm in this jail. I might as well just let the truth fly.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Wes and Laurel ignore everybody's calls to come to Annalisa's house and instead go to Cleveland.
Yeah, they
to get more information about the Charles Mahoney trial and his mother's involvement in it, and also the connection between his mom and Annalise.
Yeah.
So they find out that she was a witness, or supposed to be a witness, in the Mahoney trial. And, but she didn't show up to testify.
Yeah.
Because she was worried about being deported.
Yeah. And you also see flashbacks with Annalise going through that trial, too, and she's still really, really pregnant at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, yeah, so she visits, Well, Charles Mahoney was the guy in jail, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so she visits him, and when she tells him that Wes's mom, Rose, might be a willing witness, he kind of perks up, and he's like, Rose. And so it kind of, if you catch that, there's kind of a suggestion of something there between them, because he's like not like worried, concerned that about her testifying, more like hopeful. And so you kind of have to wonder who he is to her and how they're connected, besides the fact that she works in the building, because she works as a housekeeping or what, maintenance something there.
Yeah, she cleans.
Yeah,
she does cleaning services for the office.
And Annalise actually has to convince them, because she wants to, because Rose wants to testify anonymously, so she wouldn't be in the room and her face and her voice would be obscured. But like you said earlier, she didn't show up, and she's worried.
So. Yeah, and we see some of the microaggressions that Mr. Mahoney laid on Annalise. So I just, once again, this is another one of those scenes, sort of like that bathroom scene in the first season, that you just have to imagine a black woman is writing this scene.
Oh.
Because I just don't see Pete Nowak writing. Yeah. Don't be a discredit to your people.
I cringed at that.
What is that?
And he's, no, thing is, he's telling her, if you know the actor Adam Arkin,
you know,
he's good at asshole roles, and he did asshole perfectly in this. So he's telling Annalise in this, you know, level, calm voice, you know, just like, you know, he's having a conversation with anyone. It's like, my corporate lawyers warned me against getting another lawyer. They warned me against hiring a woman, but I looked at you, and I looked at her, and he points at her stomach like she's pregnant, thought, maybe there would be some sympathy for you there. And just proceeds to just tear her down. And
basically say, you know, I only hired you because, you know, you're a woman of color.
Yeah.
And you know, I thought you might sway the jury a bit.
Yeah, not because he thought she was competent.
Mm-hmm. And then tops it all off with that cherry.
Yeah.
You know, don't be a
discredit to your race. And I'm like, I just cringed when he said that. Wow.
I really hope a clapback is coming in these flashbacks, because I just don't see Annalise taking that line.
Yeah, I need
down.
That to be where she got her, backbone. That she has, because she didn't say anything right there, because she kind of felt like she was a bit taken aback, you know, a bit shocked that he actually said that to her.
Yeah.
And I mean,
So there was that.
Yeah.
And so Annalise goes to Rose's apartment to try to find out what happened and try to get her to come back.
Yeah.
But Rose is really not having it.
Yeah.
And Christoph is there. He just wants to watch TV.
Yeah.
But she wants him, Rose wants him out of the room, especially once there's a knock on the door, which we find out is Annalise. And then that's pretty much the end of the flashback.
Yeah.
For this part, because they go back to the law library where Wes and Laurel are at, and they're reading through all these files about the case. And, you know, Wes is trying to piece back what he remembers about the night of his mother's death. Whether it was really, because he's not sure if it was suicide or murder or what, but he doesn't seem to remember everything that happened.
Yeah. All he says he remembers is he found her body. He just says he remembers standing over her.
But since he was there, that means that he's missing memories. He's missing patches of time, which would be consistent with somebody blacking out.
Yeah. Also with trauma, too. So that's what I was thinking, and that's why I wasn't expecting what came later.
Or even, you know, even a shift in personality.
Yeah.
Something like that. Not to get too psychiatric on it, but so Wes is looking through one file, Laurel is looking through another, and you know, she slips a piece of paper out of the file and tucks it, you know, under her clothes, so that Wes will never see it.
Yeah.
And she eventually takes it back to Annalise. They at the end of the episode, after everybody's had one last night to party or get their effects in order.
Yeah.
Before Philip does whatever he's going to do with the video. Laurel comes back and asks Annalise, is this true, the notes that she found? Because the note that she found says that the leading suspect in Wes's mother's murder is her 12-year-old son. And then we see another flashback. Is this a flashback, or is this just a hypothetical scenario, whatever. Yeah. Anyway, we see something.
Yeah.
A scene of 12-year-old Christoph standing over his mother's dead body with a bloody knife in his hand.
And I think he's got blood on him, too.
Because they said in the file that they ruled it a suicide, but the wounds were on her neck. And I just, that's not the way that many people, and especially women, commit suicide. Yeah. Usually women use pills or something.
Yeah, pills, you know, turn the
something
gas on.
Something painless.
Yeah.
They don't stab themselves usually.
And so, this is why I like how this show is written, because it would have never occurred to me to think Kristoff did it. It just wouldn't have occurred to me. Because it's kind of like, that's the thing with West. I think we kind of underestimate how well they do West, because we never really kind of see that he'll be the one to do, you know, everything he does. But it's like now that it's all coming together, it's like it's starting to make sense. Because remember, we were getting all the backstories from everybody in the first season, but we were just getting these bits and pieces of Wes. But now that it's all coming together in this season, we're kind of seeing he's not the puppy everybody thought he was. And he, I don't know if he intentionally or consciously does it. He uses that, and people still kind of, you know, kind of still feel, I don't know, say feel sorry for him, or, you know, just kind of give him, you know, the benefit of a doubt.
Protective.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. They're all protective of him. But it's like, did he kill his mom when he was 12? Because I'm like, man.
And for what? For not letting him watch cartoons? TV?
Because that would be horrible. That would be
that
so
would be some serial killer
horrible.
Shit.
Yeah. It's like, we knew he killed Sam, but that was actually kind of, you know, self-defense, though. I can understand that. You know, because he was trying to defend himself. He was trying to defend his friends. That makes sense. But
he almost capped Cannelly.
That's what I was about to say. She told him, shoot me in the leg. He tried to intentionally kill her. He just missed.
He shot her in the side.
No, he was, that's what I say. He was trying to go for a vital organ, but he didn't hit, that shot didn't land.
He was about to shoot her in the head.
He was trying to go for the kill shot. I'm like, okay, this is not
a disturbing pattern.
Yes.
This is a disturbing pattern.
Yeah.
He is anything but a puppy.
Exactly.
And treating him like one is not going to help.
No. And I'm not going to lie, all of this is making me like Wes's character better, because it's like he's not, because it's, I'm starting to kind of understand where he's coming from now.
Let's add in this corner.
No, it's not saying, I'm not saying I like him as a serial killer. I like that they're making this so complicated, and so you just can't say he's this way. Like, there's something going on with him, and we need to find out what's going on with him. So I'm kind of liking the way the character is developing. Because, you know, everybody hated him in the second season started, because he was just being a dick. And I'm like, I'm starting to see why now, because that's actually part of his personality. And it was always there. He was just good at hiding it.
Anyways, I'm getting scared.
Yeah.
He's getting finer and scarier, and I don't like that.
Yeah, I know. That's the
don't pull me in with the beard.
Yeah.
And then scare me off with the serial killing.
But I was just knocked out when they showed that, like, they showed that, and it's like her 12-year-old son is the suspect. I'm like, whoa, wait, how did I miss that?
Where would they get that from? How?
Yeah, so I'm like, did he have the knife in his hand when they found him? Was he bloody when they found him? You know. Oh, I just don't know what's going on. This is why I was like,
but now it's making sense why they had him in an interview room.
Yeah.
Like a suspect, instead of interviewing him, I don't know, at the hospital or at his foster home or somewhere else. They had him booked in a police interview room.
And it's, yeah, and Annalise and Eve, like, what have we done? I need
somebody, but the lawyer, if they were his lawyers, they should have been in the room with him, not behind a two-way mirror.
Wait, but was the woman interviewing him? Wasn't she a lawyer too?
No, she's a cop.
Oh, she was, because I know they.
Because she testified in the
yeah. Yes,
she testified in the trial.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, cop definitely.
He's a minor.
Yeah, but
he should have had representation with him.
Yeah, no. Actually, they do treat black boys like that. They won't. They'll try to scare him into confession and things, but it's like he might have done it. So, oh wow, I'm like, wait a minute, how did I miss that he could have been the one who killed his mom?
He was preternaturally calm during that interview.
Yeah.
Right after his mother's death.
That's the thing. He wasn't shaken up or anything. Oh, wow.
This is weird. Yeah. This is scary.
You know, comes back with that kill look in his eyes when he was trying to kill Annalise. I'm like, oh. I'm like, you've done this before. And I don't just mean Sam. I'm like, this dude, he killed somebody when he was 12, and it was his mom. I'm like, I cannot wait.
What is Annalise doing? Remember a couple episodes ago when Bonnie kept saying you have a death wish or something, you wanted to die? Maybe that's why she, you know, got Wes into law school and all this kind of stuff. Maybe she wants him to finish the job? I don't know. This is getting, I don't know.
Because it would make sense that she's trying to make up for whatever she feels her role was in his mom's death, because they did those flashbacks of the first season. I just got here, I got accepted 2 days ago from the wait list, and then it showed her making the exception for him to join her team. And, I mean, man, like, we should have seen.
But she's also very afraid of him.
Yeah.
She's protective of him, but lately she's been very afraid
of him. But if he was the suspect in his mom's death, that would make sense why she's afraid of him. She knows he got that in him. But then that would be why Bonnie would ask her, why would you have a death wish? Because, like, if she knew that he had it in him to kill his own mom. And then she tells
him, why
would
you set him off?
And then made him shoot her, and like he was actually going to just give a safe shot in the leg. No, he was going to kill her. I mean, man, see this show.
Once again, we're asking more questions. More questions instead of answering any. Every week I come hoping that maybe we'll find out something that answers some questions from the previous episodes, but nope.
No, they just...
Just new questions.
No, they had to be like, oh, Wes was the suspect in killing his mom. What? Wait.
Yeah, and then they end the fucking episode.
I know.
Thanks.
And that's the thing. This was a slow last 5 minutes because they were all waiting to hear back from Philip, but they were like, okay, the time passed, but then... They do get another email from him. This time he's been outside Annalise's house where she was with Nate.
And he took off his shirt.
Yes.
And got into bed.
Yes. Thank you.
After they had dinner. Oh, appreciate it.
So, you know, thank you for shirtless Billy Brown. We really do appreciate that. And we needed it.
Yes.
We needed it.
We deserved it. After all you've put us through these past few episodes.
And we really...
We have earned shirtless Billy Brown.
We especially earned it after that Wes and Laurel kiss. Because, ew.
That was awkward. That was... Why?
But I'm glad they stopped right there. Like, yeah, I shouldn't have done that. Like, no.
Yeah. You should. Let me go check on the food. Yeah, let's go get that food.
But wait a minute. Did they kiss before or after? I hope, no, it was after. No, it was before she found that paper.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, good. Because if it had been after, I'm like, Laurel. Because, yeah, she's already in tears.
No, but they flash back when... I think she'd already tucked the paper into her clothes or whatever.
She did that.
Because they flashed back to that moment when she was talking to Annalise.
Yes, I think that was the last thing they did before they left. So she wouldn't have known that before, you know, they kissed, but she's already, you know,
I have to watch.
Yeah, she's already, you know, in tears crying. Basically, Frank is my father. I fell in love with the man who has everything I hate about my father. I'm like, oh, girl. I mean, look, Frank fine as hell.
So she likes bad boys. I mean, you and her would have some stuff in common.
Just yeah, saying. We make really bad decisions because of that.
I'm just saying, you're not alone, girl. It's not.
Because if she's drawn bad boys, that would explain why she and Wes kissed.
Wes kissed and Wes, yep.
You kissed with a serial killer.
The pattern continues. It's just, oh God.
Okay, Laurel.
This fucking show.
Oh, man.
So.
Ooh. That just took me on a ride. That was just a bit. This is why, you know, when the season's over, I'm going to have to marathon the entire show again. And see, this is what I also say. Somebody, please cut this show in chronological order. Please. Just cut the show in chronological order.
Somebody might lose their mind trying to piece all this stuff back
together.
Yeah, I
know. But it's like,
in order. That sounds like a headache.
Yeah. Because that's actually part of why the show works. It's not chronological. There's just so much flashback and, oh, this is what you missed and all that. And it's whiplash. You know, you just get whiplash trying to go through this show.
But it makes, I mean, there's no reliable narrator.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't even rely on the flashbacks because you're not sure if all of them are true or not.
Yeah.
Or just what people think might have happened.
Yeah.
Because they keep cutting the flashbacks in different ways from different people's point of views.
Yeah.
And, anyway.
Oh, also one thing I wanted to mention. That scene where Annalise, she's on the phone with Sam. She's, you know, braiding her hair. You know, well, re-braiding her hair. Because, you know, been nasty to her, you know, telling her and stuff like that. The interesting thing is, she doesn't actually tell him exactly what's happened. You know, I'm like, they're just kind of like talking sweet on the phone to each other and all that. Go to show Sam, he is with Bonnie.
But she's got all her clothes on her.
Yeah, but still.
She's giving him that look, but.
Still,
I don't know.
We all know. That would explain, though, because if she was having an affair with Sam while he was married to Annalise, and she's his patient, and she's Annalise's student, I mean, that would explain, that really would kind of explain her loyalty to Annalise. I mean, I can understand, like, one, her feeling that guilt, and two, feeling that connection, and also finding out, yes, Sam, just kind of coming to the realization Sam did both of them wrong. You know, I can kind of understand that.
I kind of feel like he didn't touch her back then.
Really?
Because when they had that kiss in the first season, seemed like that was her first taste of some
but
Sam.
She wanted it, though. Maybe that's what.
I think she had a crush on him from way back, but I don't think he did anything with her besides mind fuck.
Yeah. Because there was definitely some manipulation going on with him and her. He definitely had some sort of hold on her. And he knew it.
And and he has this pattern. He's starting to show a pattern of his own. Like, he goes after, he preys on victims of childhood sexual abuse.
Yes. And he was a psychiatrist.
That's just the lowest level of dirtbag.
Yeah. Ugh.
That's just a really sick, pathological level of dirtbaggery. So, I don't know why he does that. I don't know. Maybe he's trying to manipulate them and he thinks he'll get he can manipulate them enough to get sex out of him, which would just be abusing them further. God. Yeah. Sam was sick.
Yeah, he was.
I'm glad he's gone.
Yes.
But yeah, I wouldn't doubt. I mean, you saw he was coming out of one session and putting on a new shirt.
Mm.
So yeah, I don't think that Annalise was the only client that he slept with.
Yeah.
And screwed up.
She mentally. Was having an affair with him when he was married before, though, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Wow. But then she ended up marrying her.
So then, I don't know. I just get the feeling that they weren't doing anything physical yet. That it was more mental mind fuckery, but I don't know. Yeah. We'll see. I'm sure more dirtbaggery will come to light in the next episode.
Yes.
And we'll be asking a whole other list of questions.
Oh.
Thanks, Pete. Thanks, Shonda.
Thank you. I love how this show just makes me think about all this stuff, though.
I want some answers.
Yeah, me too. It's a fun ride.
I guess. if they're saving it all up for the last episode, nah, just give me some answers. Yeah. Give me a reason to keep coming back. I feel like Charlie Brown with
the football.
Looking at Lucy with the football.
Exactly, yeah. They're just going to keep.
I think you're going to do me right this time.
Yeah,
but
nah.
Nope.
You just added some more.
I'm back on my ass again. Yep.
Oh, well.
So that is our recap. If you have anything to say, hit us up on Twitter at Black Girl Squee, on email at blackgirlsquee@gmail.com. Let us know if you're watching the show with us and have any theories, any ideas that can answer some of these damn questions. Help us out here.
Please.
Yes. Girl, I don't know if I want to do this.
I kind of don't, but... Oh. But, you know, the Tyra gift, we were rooting for you. We were all rooting for you. How dare you? That's
pretty much all I have to say. I'm gonna make this quick because
yeah,
I can't.
This hurts.
Catch the fade.
This hurts, really.
Catch the fade. Person that has to catch the fade is the one, Miss Leanne LaHavis, who went on a Twitter tirade, I think after the Grammys or something.
I think it was a British award show.
Oh, the Brits. Yeah. Wow. After the Brit Awards. I didn't read all the tweets. I think she had deleted them by the time.
Hey, you but, know somebody
you
got
know,
screen caps.
Of course. So... Something about just ranting about racism and how she's Greek and all the stuff, all this other stuff, and just a really confused,
okay,
illogical rant about race on Twitter.
Okay. What it,
which she has sent.
Yeah, me. Where it started is because they did like a hashtag like Brits so white, like Oscar so white. And thing is, I don't know if the story they did it actually had her picture there, or if a fan who just kind of felt like, okay, we need to, you know, we need to acknowledge, you know, Black entertainers and things like that for their talent and their work. But Leanne responded like she didn't want to be any part of this because she felt the whole thing was racist and, you know, kind of counterproductive or something like that. And then she ended up having this back and forth, you know, with this woman. And like you said, she was kind of like pointing out, look, I'm half Greek. What do you want me to do? Like, not acknowledge, you know, my Greek, you know, this part of me too. Like, yeah, but you're also half Jamaican, you know, like, and she was going on this, like, people didn't get nominated. It wasn't their lack of nominations isn't because they were brown. I guess she was saying that these other people just happened to be more talented than brown people, you know, who missed their nominations and things like that. And so it does just kind of, you know, end up with her being like, you know, she ended it hashtag all lives matter.
Holy.
Yeah. She went to All Lives Matter. Now, I can totally understand.
First of all,
I can totally understand you, like, yeah, I'm Greek. I can understand if you say I am Greek and I am, you know, Jamaican. I can totally understand you acknowledging both of your parents like that. But when you say that in a way that you're trying to say I'm not black or I'm not like other black people, that's where you got me fucked up.
And after her press tour in the U.S. where she kind of winced at being called black and made comments that, you know, made her seem like if being called, like being called black
and
was a bad thing. After that, all of this stuff is just, it's just icing on a shit cake.
Yeah.
And first of all, I don't think the white artists in the UK who are constantly digging up old sounds from black people all over the diaspora, I don't think they're more talented than any brown people.
No, they aren't.
They're just recreating our sounds, our music. How can they be more talented than us? So learn your history, Leanne. Second, I really haven't seen it for you outside of your music ever since you were on Another Round, girl. Heaven called you a black girl with a guitar, and you kind of cringed at that, and then you tried to correct her, and you called yourself brown.
Oh.
And you wanted to make sure that they got it right. I'm not black, I'm brown.
Okay.
What's wrong with being black? And I don't know. Maybe it's a disconnect. I'm American, she's British, whatever. They have a different ideas about race. We'll say that. And you know. Who's to say who's right or wrong, but I don't know. This whole thing there's just this stench of anti-blackness.
Yes, there is.
That's been following her around after this, after she came to the States to promote her album. And, it just got more pungent with this Twitter rant. And, yeah, I'm done, girl. But, thank goodness Corinne's back. So, your services are no longer needed.
Please don't fuck up.
You can. Leanne, what you can do is catch this fade.
We were rooting for you, Leanne. We loved you, too. We loved you. This hurts.
The album was great, but I'm done. You are dismissed.
Yeah. So please go in this All Lives Matter land where, you know, people don't see you as black and treat you that way. You know, because the British accent will only get you so far, even here in the States. Okay. So we moving on to who else can catch the fade.
Girl, I'm done. I'm spent. If you have some more fades to throw, then have at it.
Okay, so, well, unless you have just been in a cave somewhere and put your fingers in your ears, you know that this past, well, it'll be two Sundays ago now, Rishon became canon on The Walking Dead. Now, everybody in that fandom that I know in my circles, they knew it was coming because, you know, they already had advance, and so they just waited for it.
Oh, they were spoiled.
Yes, it was just so much joy, so much jubilance around the whole thing, and I just enjoyed it, and, you know, but even then, before it even aired, they had to deal with the assholes. Because people in this fandom, actually in all fandoms, cannot stand the fact that this beautiful, dark-skinned black woman is not just, you know, a fling or anything like this, but actually an object of love for their white male lead. And it's, I think it was Source Damal, you know, she's saying it's, it was Abby Holidays. She was saying, you know, it matters that, you know, this is a dark-skinned black woman. It matters that she's a fighter. You know, it matters that, you know, she's not always delicate. You know, that this is who, you know, Rick chooses. And it's not just that he chooses. He is in love.
You're fading in and out. Wait.
Just 10 of 10 of 10 of to her, and being caring for her. And it was it. And I actually did watch that too. And it did happen really, really nicely. They did this scene very well. But of course, now you have the people like, why can't men and women just be friends on these shows? They're more like siblings, you know, and family. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? I don't even watch this show, but I see the gifs. I see, you know, videos and bits and pieces of there. These two people are in love with each other. Okay. Deal with it. Deal with it. Andrew Lincoln has been wanting this to happen since Danai Gurira came on that show. He has wanted this.
And his mama.
His mama wanted this. And he, see, this is why you know he wanted it. He kept trying to say, oh, my mom wants this to happen. Well, you know you wanted to do this scene with her. You know you've been wanting to, okay? And, like, he hasn't. And he, like, the same way that Tom Meeson gets when people come sideways at Nicole, that's how he got with Danai Gurira. He was not having it. And so now that, you know, Rishon is canon, everybody's like, they are still in denial. Like, I just can't see him with, you know, Michonne. Like, you know, it just, something about it just bothers me. I'm like, did it bother you when he was, why did you want him with Jesse then? Why was Jesse a better choice? Huh? Please explain this to me. Because you were not crying about men and women being friends when he was about to get with Jesse. You weren't crying about that when he was trying it with some other something that happened before that. Seriously, what's your problem? Why don't you just be honest about it?
Oh, so yeah, and it's always when it's a black woman. That's about to get loved on.
Thank you.
It's like they don't think we're deserving of it because, you know, you hear the same things in the Flash fandom with Iris West.
Yes.
You hear the same things in the Sleepy Hollow fandom with Abby Mills. I mean, just pick a black female character. Bonnie in the Vampire Diaries. Just pick a character. If they're a black woman.
Wasn't there also a black woman?
If they're strong and independent and don't deserve any love.
Yeah, wasn't there also a black woman love interest in, like, Supernatural?
For one episode.
Oh, okay, never mind. But still, she still gets hate for that one episode. Because I get some of the Supernatural fandom sometime, and apparently there is an epic hate for this woman who showed up one time with, you know, one of the white male leads there. I'm like, sit down. Sit the fuck down. Have a seat.
But now she's Vixen.
Oh, so. That was her. Mm-hmm. Okay. So. Cool. Go.
Yeah.
All right. So, Rashawn Detractus, you can catch these hands and this fate. Because I'm going to need you to sit down.
And you can.
Denai Guerrera is gorgeous. I love her. And
stunning.
If you think ain't nobody going to be sitting there checking her out, or that she. Please have a seat. And stop trying to suddenly use asexuality when you see a black woman and you don't think that, you know, she should be with anybody. Stop that. You making black asexuals real mad.
She had a boyfriend and a baby before the zombie apocalypse. Yes. She's not.
Yeah.
She's not asexual. That's your boy Daryl Dixon, who you're constantly trying to ship with everybody on the planet.
Yeah.
But anyway, don't get me started. This fandom fuckery. I could be here all day.
Okay.
So y'all can catch the fade. You can kiss both of our natural black asses and shut the fuck up.
Okay.
Squeak queen.
Squee!
We need some squee after all them fades. I'm shouting out Aure Atika, who is a Moroccan and French actress who starred in episode 1 of BBC's The Night Manager, which is also starring some lanky British dude.
Searching, you
know, talk about from time. Hiddles kind of. That we talk about from time to time in another segment of ours. But I'm shouting her out because she was so good in this episode. She is a really good actress. And she had some great lines, and she was just a wonderful presence and gave a great performance in this episode. So I hope we'll see more things from her because she's really good. Mm-hmm. And so shout out to her.
And more Squeak Queens, in case you missed it, go check out Uptown Magazine. Denai Guerrera and Lupita Nyong'o appear with, I think, three or four other very stunning black women on the cover of Uptown Magazine. And this is the cast and crew of Lupita Nyong'o's play, Eclipse. And they're also...
It's actually...
Huh?
It's Denai's play.
Oh, I'm sorry. Denai's play. And Lupita stars in it. Oh, sorry about that, y'all.
Yes.
But, they look so gorgeous in this. And then there's the inside shot of Denai and Lupita, you know, are hugged. They're kind of hugging, you know, and Denai's hugging Lupita from the back. And they are glowing in that shot. They look so gorgeous. I mean, I oh, my gosh.
Hashtag that melanin. That melanin, y'all.
They just look so beautiful. And just seeing that sisterhood and, you know, black women doing things together and working together and making magic like that. See, this is why I wish I could pick up that magazine and just have a copy in my house with me. I can just frame it and...
Yeah, put it on
the wall. Because they just look gorgeous in this. And I really wish I could see that play, but... They're beautiful.
Denai just winning on all
levels.
She is.
She
winning on TV. She's winning on Broadway.
Oh, yeah. And if you saw her on that...
Pick a sleigh, Denai.
Yeah,
pick a
sleigh. I know. If you saw her on... They do the Talking Dead after that, and she was wearing that white dress. Oh, my God.
Killing it.
Yeah. That woman.
She's stunning.
That woman just... Oh, my gosh.
She's amazing. That is a very fine squeak queen, Inda. I have to give it up to you. That's awesome. Great choice.
Thank you.
Yes, no. That's a great choice. If I didn't have Aure, I would have chose Denai. Yep. That's good stuff.
Yeah.
Pick a sleigh, Denai. I'm confused.
Shoot. As we were
slaying. You gotta be this great playwright, this great actress, this stunning specimen of womanhood, pick a sleigh. But don't continue slaying us on all levels, girl. It's wonderful. It's black girl magic.
Yes.
So those are our squeak queens. And Enda, why don't you go ahead and get into this week in depth.
Okay, right? So I just decided, you know what, since we're, you know, I'm just on my Denai Guerrero kick, I just decided to honor the man who gave us another great Denai moment, you know, for the week. And this week it's Andrew Lincoln, our favorite Brit with the funny Southern accent on The Walking Dead. Because, I said, that whole scene with him and with Rick and Michonne was so well executed. And then it got better because if you see the cut scene, they're lying in bed together. And they're naked, and while she has her arm, you know, around him, he's got his hand flat on her ass. And I'm like, I don't blame you though. I really don't blame you. He just got his hand dead set on her ass, and then it got better because they hear somebody in the room. One of them says, "Okay, get up," and they jump out of bed. He grabs a gun, she grabs a sword, and they are just standing there, bare ass naked.
Butt
naked, ready to kill somebody. It was, I'm like, see, this is a great couple. Like, we just got down, but it's like, still, we know to be ready in a second. We better be ready to fight in a second. And that was great. And they came up with that on their own because it was like she was supposed to cover herself or whatnot. They were like, they wouldn't do that. They know they wouldn't do that. So they're just going to just get up exactly as they are and be ready.
Yeah. Why waste time? Right?
Like, look, it's life or death. They are not about to sit here and like, oh, wait, I'm not dressed. Like, no.
Wait till I'm decent. No. Zombie.
I know, right? Yeah. No. And it was perfect. It was perfect. And so, Andrew Lincoln, find some pictures of you looking really, really nice that aren't in that movie that I kind of hate. But, we're going to, Andrew Lincoln, you're the man this week.
We almost saw that print for real.
Yeah, we almost did.
So, all right. So that continues our tradition of lanky Brits on DWIDP. What can I say?
Something in the water.
We have a thing. It's our thing. So, Enda, woman is vocab.
All right. Hey, still keeping up with something, my thing. Because today's womanist vocab word is white fragility. White fragility is, quote, a state in which even a minimum amount of racial stress becomes intolerable, triggering a range of defensive moves. These moves include outward display of emotions such as anger, fear, and guilt, and behaviors such as argumentation, silence, and leaving the stress-inducing situation, end quote. Dr. Robin DiAngelo coined the term in 2011, white fragility.
Ooh, we're seeing a lot of it.
Yes.
As a response to Oscar So White. You know, all of these white actors came out of the woodwork and just had to show their racist asses. And because of this minimum amount of racial stress, that was the hashtag Oscar So White.
Yeah.
I mean, just pick something. I mean, there's so many tiny little stressors that, you know, we go through every day and just shrug off.
that become a full-blown thing when it happens to a white person. So white fragility is something that we're aware of 24/7 and have to work our lives around, sadly. Yeah. So thank you for that womanist vocab. That was very, very good. Black Girl Commandments. Thou shalt respect the ship Sheriff Samurai Booty.
I don't know who came up with that in the fandom, but thank you. Sheriff Samurai Booty.
It fits. Rick's the sheriff. Michonne has the katana, and
got booty.
Rick's an ass man.
Oh, yeah, he sure is. He been looking at that ass since the first time she showed up.
Season three. Oh, gosh. So that is our show. Once again, you can contact us on Twitter at Black Girl Squeak. Individually, Inda is at Inda's Corner. I'm at Dust Daughter. Our Tumblr is blackgirlsquee. Our email is blackgirlsquee@gmail.com. And please rate and review us on iTunes. It will help other people find the show. And it will give us something to read on the show. So we'd love to get your feedback. So thanks for listening. You two or three special folks out there. And we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
Bye.